So Just Stop Oil are back, as are Insulate Britain. For those who don't know, overseas.
Get away already.
Yeah, we've heard this phenomenon in the UK of eco-protesters just sitting in roads, blocking traffic, bringing the country to a standstill. I remember at one point you showed me a clip of where they were tying themselves to oil tankers and one of them was vegetable oil, which was just really funny. But this is deeply insidious. I hope I don't get arrested for saying that word again. Because it's tied to an international effort to conscript us into relying on having a carbon social credit system. Now, this sounds very conspiratorial. I know. But this is the consequence of their ideological campaign. They want to limit your way of life. They want to fundamentally overthrow the systems that have made us a prosperous and peaceful country and then make you incredibly dependent on a system which limits your impact on the environment. And so what we're going to see here is the institutional ideological solidarity and the financial funding of these groups and how that is driving us towards a system of digital immiseration and dependence on governments and international bodies to get our scraps of mealworms and our renewably lighted pod for the week.
But I don't think that the people on the street, these sort of, entitled lunatics, I think is a fair way of putting it. I don't think they're the ones that are going to influence public policy. I think all of the nefarious deeds are going to be done behind closed doors with interesting relationships between government and private entities that are not to the benefit of the average person.
You say that. They're far best versed in the actual ideological intricacies of these policies than you might think. Speaking of which, a woman who, I can't decide whether she has more teeth or brain cells because there's few of both, Tracy Maligan, Insulate Britain's representative, she was out there yesterday, the time of recording, this is Thursday, so this would have been Wednesday, for her Occupy Westminster protest, sitting during Prime Minister's questions where Liz Truss was getting up and talking about environmental and economic policies at this time of high energy prices and the like, and they decided to complain that she was instituting kill policies and saying that you're allowing a certain amount of people to die and that can't stand. So we can just play this babbling lunatic.
We are here outside of the House of Commons, Liz Truss's and PMQs, and we're here because our government is still failing to insulate it. They're still failing to consider doing projects that will benefit the whole of society by making good jobs, with a project that will pay for itself, bring down our emissions, help us save precious energy, and stop people dying in Britain from a choice of heating or eating. Instead of doing that, they're in there issuing more kill policies. 330,000 people died over 8 years because of austerity policies, and we all know now that they are choices. So we are here today to say we don't need to protect the economy, that's just a theory. We need to protect each other and our children, because what is going on is obscene.
We don't need to protect the economy, it's just a theory.
Also, how can you say people have died from austerity policies when the government spending has done nothing but go up? You look at NHS spending as a portion of GDP, and it's just a graph that just goes up like that, like straight up.
I agree, actually. Cutting all those police numbers and stopping stop and search in majority-minority neighbourhoods has led to lots of people being stabbed, and so there have been lives lost to austerity, of course, but she doesn't mean that. And the funny thing I wanted to bring that clip in is, other than the sort of inarticulate, uncouth phrasing, would any of that rhetoric be out of place in a World Economic Forum press release? An appeal large-scale oversold deaths, an appeal to large-scale oversold benefits of a fully renewable green jobs economy, none of that would have been out of place in a Biden speech. So we do see, as much as you said these crusties aren't the one influencing policy, we do see this filter from the streets onto podiums, into the halls of Davos, same ideology.
But I think it's, and they're not going to like this term, it's a trickle-down thing, isn't it? They've not come up with these ideas necessarily themselves, they have been received from above.
I think it's symbiotic. I think it's just as circular as the donut economy that the WEF are proposing. So if we go on to the next one, Julia Hartley Brewer decided to do an interview with this woman, and I thought I'd again just point out how there's a competition of economic theories here. They're just a mask-off admission of their socialism. If we can just play the clip that I sent you, John.
So we are in a climate emergency. Now, my dad used to keep tropical fish, right? And they were tricky to look after. One morning you could wake up all dead because the temperature changed slightly. Now,
government, you know.
You're so facetious about such an important issue.
What, dead goldfish?
Because we are human, animals, crops. We can all only survive within certain ranges. Our bodies need certain things. Now, insulating our homes not just you individually, but a government that recognise programmes like that are where we need to go to combat the climate crisis and the cost of greed crisis. And you're damn right, people wouldn't be dying. 330,000 people in Britain died because of government austerity policies. And we all know that that was a choice now, right?
Okay, well, I'm still, I don't accept that figure. I still don't understand how, well, if we insulate our homes, that we're going to stop war, famine, and I don't know, pestilence, whatever else, drought.
You don't understand how caring for each other and investing our money, you know, the economic theory we follow, and it is just a theory. It's about how we share our resources. It is just a theory, darling. We've only been doing it this way for 40 years, right? It's about
what have we only been doing for 40 years?
It's about how we share our resources and how we do the work. Now, Friedman, economic theory that we follow, that's only been in place for around four decades. Before that, bankers and head teachers, when I was a girl, you were probably a young adult, bankers and head teachers earned about the same money, didn't they?
So bankers and head teachers should make the same money. The point I wanted to raise there is that she specifically names Milton Friedman and said it's just an economic theory. Now, the reason I fall more on the Austrian side than the Chicago side, and I know that you like the Chicago School economists.
I'm more of an Austrian, though.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. We had a bit of discussion before. I thought you enjoyed the statistical side of the Chicago
school. Yeah, I like that they use data to back up their claims. Yeah. Although I do like, I more broadly agree with the Austrians. I like the methods of the Chicago school.
Yeah, well, they're more first principle approach, the Austrians. Mm-hmm. And so they're correct. She's completely correct with a sort of 40-year timescale. She's talking about neoliberalism conflating the two. I think she might have heard someone describe Naomi Klein's shock doctrine to her once drunk, and so she's repeating what she can remember.
I mean, Milton Friedman said a private company's only obligation is to return a profit to its shareholders. Yeah. I don't think she agrees with that, does she?
No, she is basically advancing stakeholder capitalism on the foot soldier ground level. But the idea that we are inalienable right to work and trade as individuals, which is just free enterprise, it's not the Marxist conception of capitalism. It's only 40 years old, it's just balmy. Because otherwise, how would have Marx rallied against it? And also, it's just a theory. Meanwhile, the circular economy and the labour theory of value, which says that everything has a fixed value, you know, like an iPhone on a desert island where you can't charge the damn thing and it can get damaged by sun and water, as if that has the same value than in our modern, prosperous, electrified society today. As if that's somehow a science and not a theory. Completely insane. But speaking of science, it seems that people in positions of power agree with this woman. We see here the World Economic Forum. Melissa Fleming, the UN's Undersecretary General for Global Communications, is speaking at a panel, and Calvin Robinson's reposted that, and you just have to hear this clip to believe it.
You know, we partnered with Google, for example. If you Google climate change, you will, at the top of your search, you will get all kinds of UN resources. We started this partnership when we were shocked to see that when we'd Googled climate change, we were getting incredibly distorted information right at the top. So we're becoming much more proactive. You know, we own the science and we think that the world, you know, should know it. And the platforms themselves also do. But again, it's a huge, huge challenge that I think all sectors of society need to be very active in.
So all sectors of society are being conscripted into their ideological cause.
We own the science.
Yep.
Science can be owned, bought and paid for.
By Anthony Fauci. But the frustrating thing here is, and this is why I'm saying it's ideologically symbiotic, it's not just trickle down, is she has the same attitude as the people in the streets. So she is influencing their perception of the climate catastrophe by skewing the results. But she's also bought into the same misanthropic perceptions of people hundreds of years ago, like Thomas Malthus or the hippies of the 60s. The campus revolutionaries have become the people that occupy the positions of power. So they're indistinguishable ideologically from the people sitting in the streets. And so it's just a feedback loop of climate nonsense that we're being subjected to, either because our cars and commutes to work are being blocked by Insulate Britain, or our search results are being skewed by the United Nations and the World Economic Forum. It's the same. It's a perfect infinity loop of nonsense. So, what science have the World Economic Forum settled on? We go to this latest article. Myocarbon, an approach for inclusive and sustainable cities.
Oh no, I know where this is going.
The inclusivity of citizens is becoming the most important element of success or failure in the journey towards sustainability. Community-led initiatives can make a significant contribution towards sustainability, increased resilience, and social cohesion. So this is the social emotional learning language that is being pushed through schools, specifically by the WEF as well. There have been numerous examples of personal carbon allowance programs in discussion for the last two decades. However, they had limited success due to a lack of social acceptance, political resistance, and a lack of awareness and fair mechanism for tracking, quote, my carbon emissions. So they're saying we need the digital infrastructure, we need you to shut up and take it, and we need to suppress political dissent. Perhaps that's why Biden's passed his recent directive hunting down political dissidents, is to find the people that will not be conscripted into your carbon social credit score system. So if we go on to exactly how they conceive of this, this is an article linked in that article, right? This is an article from Nature that the World Economic Forum are drawing on. So we're just
it's also worth mentioning that Nature is the main, as in it's the most prestigious academic journal in the sciences.
Yeah, so very concerning this has been published here. It says, personal carbon credit allowances revisited. And this is revisited after COVID-19 specifically, right? In this context, and this is of COVID-19, of zoonotic diseases, which definitely didn't escape from the Wuhan laboratory, and in the context of the worsening climate crisis, which even the IPCC projections do not say the world is going to burn within 10 years. But anyway, in this context, the introduction of personal carbon credit allowances, PCAs, a mitigation policy proposal developed in the 1990s, it is ripe for revisitation. This policy aims to link personal action with global carbon reduction goals. So it says link, what they mean is compel personal action toward global carbon reduction goals. A PCA scheme would entail all adults receiving an equal, tradable carbon allowance that reduces over time in line with national targets. In its original design, the allowance could cover around 40% of energy-related carbon emissions in high-income countries, encompassing individuals' carbon emissions relating to travel, space heating, water heating, and electricity. So all the things you need to live, you're going to be rationed, and you're going to have an individual ration. And they're obviously going to do this via smart meters and electric cars and things like that. Allowances were envisioned to be deducted from the personal budget with every payment for transport, fuel, home heating fuels, and electricity bills. So every single payment you make. People in shortage would be able to purchase new additional units in the personal carbon market from those with excess to sell. New, more ambitious PCA proposals include economy-wide emissions encompassing food, services, and consumption-related emissions, for example. So this means the carbon labelling system that's been proposed by multiple trade bodies, which I do not necessarily oppose. It'd be like having your calorie counter or your nutrition on the packaging. It might even be a more interesting way of finding out where your things are made if you don't want to buy plastic in your products, for example, because it's now in the placenta of babies. Getting more information on what is in your products is always a great idea. When it's linked to compelling you to buying low carbon products and that you have a carbon credit ceiling, that is a pernicious incursion on your ability to live a peaceful and prosperous life. That is hell.
It's also worth mentioning as well that arbitrary numerical economic targets were one of the main features of the Soviet Union's economy that led to its collapse. So that's this, right?
Yeah.
Sure, the nature of the quotas are different, but it's going to have the same effect on the economy.
Yep, and they're saying it's tradable, right? This also, they say directly in here that they're going to use the infrastructure of digital IDs from lockdowns and the data on behavioural compliance from the COVID-19 lockdowns as well, to introduce this sort of stuff. So people that said COVID is a conspiracy theory were, of course, wrong. Also, the WEF article that this was linked in says that COVID-19 was a test of social responsibility. So it's all a lot of priming here. In here, it says that you can trade your carbon credits if you don't have enough, right? Well, I would like to point you to this. This was a debate I did. We're not going to play the clip. You can go and watch it in your own time, either on Twitter or via the full thing via YouTube. It's a very interesting little exchange. It's a debate I did with Shara Ali, the former deputy of the Green Party. Now, he was kicked out of the party not for this statement, but because he said that trans women are not women, which is obviously very transphobic. During here, he said, you should have an app on your phone that limits your carbon budget. And I said, when it's authoritarian, who sets the carbon limit? He said, we do. Again, collective responses. It's the exact same words of the left. So the people who support these eco-protests in the street are the exact same people running the government. And we're being subjected to it. And it's infuriating. And when I said, okay, what if you hit your limit for the month and you need to do something? He goes, well, we shouldn't trade it. And I said, oh, okay, well, should there be punishments for exceeding it? And he went, and he said, well, I'd rather not do that. I'd rather not do that, but maybe we should. So he's endorsing throwing you in prison if you can't pay the fines, which is what I drilled him down on, if you exceed your personal carbon credit budget, because in event of an emergency, you need to take an extra Uber. I mean, these are the people that are influencing.
You could be close to the end of your, you know, your carbon usage and, I don't know, relatives on death's door in a hospital. You want to get there to catch their last moments. So like, no, you're getting a fine for that.
Yep. Or Enslaved Britain are sitting in the road and blocking the ambulance, which they have done before as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, living in a digitally monitored hellscape. Now, this is all speculative, right? Until you find out the rollout has already started. So let's go to the next one. The story that Harry covered recently about PayPal being our overlords and deplatforming you and fining you for misinformation. It turns out they're saying, oh, we never intended to fine our users for misinformation. Yet. So PayPal Holding Incorporated says it has no intention of fining customers for spreading misinformation after attracting criticism for publishing a new agreement outlining such a plan. The issue gained traction over the weekend after the company published policy updates prohibiting users from using the PayPal service for activities identified by the company as, quote, the sending, posting, or publication of any messages, content, or materials promoting misinformation in an acceptable use policy due to kick in on November 3rd. A penalty of $2,500 could be imposed for each violation, according to the update. The notice included incorrect information, a spokesperson for PayPal said in a statement to Bloomberg News. PayPal is not fining people for misinformation, and this language never intended to be inserted into our policy. Really? I think you just pre-released it.
How do you accidentally write all that out?
Yeah.
It's just my fingers got carried away. Oh.
Yeah, I know. The reason for the about face was because the shares for the company tumbled by as much as 5.3% to $85.43, the biggest intraday decline since July 26th. They dropped 4.7% to 85.90 at 9:48 a.m. in New York. So the stock's tanked. So they decided, well, we'll quickly about face this policy because we've got public criticism. So public criticism does seem to work, at least baying the beast away for a short amount of time. So keep sharing videos like this, keep making a fuss on Twitter, etc. But if they're going to fine you for misinformation policy, what happens when you transgress the climate? Boom, there goes your carbon credit for the month. That'll teach you, citizen. If we go on to the next one, the Gates Foundation, everyone's favorite bully boy for conspiracy theories. Well, it turns out he's actually funding digital IDs to the tune of $200 million. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been revealed to have pledged $1.27 billion in funding towards achieving the UN Sustainable Development Goals, the UN again, and the World Economic Forum, who have conceived the donut economy specifically to target those 17 goals, with a portion of this going towards invasive technologies. In a press release issued on September 21st, following the United Nations General Assembly Week, the foundation stated that the $200 million of this sizable fund would be going towards expanding digital public infrastructure. This funding will help expand infrastructure that low and middle income countries can use to become more resilient to crises such as food shortages, public health threats, and climate change, as well as aid in pandemic and economic recovery. The infrastructure encompasses tools such as interoperable payment systems, digital ID, data sharing system, and civil registry databases, the press release states. So, your voting, your medical information, your carbon credit, your ID, and your payment, all tied together to fight climate change. You're seeing the infrastructure all start to take shape. If we go to the next one, even the financial systems are not allowed to dissent. Turns out, the World Bank president, who was installed by Donald Trump, is trying to be ousted by members of the Biden administration for his transgressions against the climate. So we see again the financial systems falling into line. I mean, after all, when the World Economic Forum did their blueprint for digital identity, pretty much every major bank and the UK Cabinet Office was in board in doing the information meetings and the word escapes me, but the procedure where you gather together and spitball ideas on how to develop it. So, quotes from this political article. A long-running campaign to oust the World Bank president David Malplass, led by climate hawks within the Biden administration and European capitals, has been given a huge assist by Malplass himself. But no one wants to strike the final blow yet. In an extraordinary, unforced error during a New York Times panel last week, Malplass dodged answering directly when asked if burning fossil fuels contributes to global warming, saying only, "I am not a scientist." 2 days later, he said, "It's clear that greenhouse gas emissions from human activity are causing climate change," and that he should have been more precise in saying he was not a climate denier. So number one, if you're an ideological dissenter who even makes a single slip up from the orthodoxy, you will lose one of the most lucrative jobs in the world, and being subject to a struggle session, then have to do an incriminating apology weeks later. But two, I thought we had to trust the science, so of course he can't speak on it. Of course he can't speak on climate science if he's not a scientist. Of course, Ketanji Brown Jackson can't speak on female biology if she's not a biologist. So I thought the UN owned the science, not the World Bank, so he's only deferring to your authority. But see how the hegemony axes people who are not on board. If we go to the next one, we see developing in our own country. Britain cannot sit out digital pound indefinitely, says City Minister. Britain's Financial Services Minister said on Tuesday that a lengthy delay in delaying a digital pound would create problems for the finance and the economy. So all the financial problems created by fiat currency being overprinted are now the excuse for introducing the digital ID, the digital currency, which will be linked with your carbon credit score. The Finance Ministry and Bank of England are jointly assessing a digital pound with public consultation due later this year. Now, when that comes out, I think we should be all issuing replies to that, because these consultations are open, and a lot of the time activist groups and non-profits will flood the replies and skew public perception. Like the cycling lobby did that for the recent changes to the highway code that allowed cyclists to go in the middle. And they said it's for the economy and the environment. It's not to do with public safety. So I think once that comes out, I think we should publicize it and everyone should be writing in. He says, there are some very broad geopolitical concerns if the UK sits out indefinitely the ability to issue its own digital currency. Others will, newly appointed City Minister Andrew Griffith told Parliament's Treasury Select Committee. Number one, fire Andrew Griffith. Number two, the geopolitical concerns are that our 1% of global emissions will not be on the tradable carbon credit market and you won't be able to have your lifestyle limited. Just lastly, this credit card has a carbon emission spending limit for the World Economic Forum. So it turns out that Swedish fintech company Doconomy has launched a new credit card that monitors the carbon footprint of its customers and cuts off their spending when they hit their carbon credit max.
Do you want to know something interesting about Sweden?
Please do.
They're the country in the world that has eliminated paper money the most.
Right, that's interesting.
Funny that this is going on, isn't it?
Sorry, yeah, that's all right. No, please. Well, the Dutch and the Australians have been quickly removing ATMs from the streets so you can't actually withdraw cash. And then in here in the UK, you know, places like Prezzo, Starbucks, every self-service checkout now doesn't take cash at all. Very odd. I wonder if they're just pushing us towards the cashless future where they can assign us a carbon credit. The DO card tracks the CO2 emissions linked to purchases to calculate the carbon impact of every transaction. Nothing outside the state, nothing against the state. The aim is to encourage people to actively reduce their carbon footprint and demonstrate the impact that small changes can have on the environment. So they've actually partnered with the UN for this to enable the carbon offsetting on projects certified by the UN as part of their 17 goals. And if you click the links throughout this article, which you can do in your own time, you'll find out that this card is not just with Doconomy, it's partnered with MasterCard, the largest, alongside Visa, provider of credit card services in the world. So when does this become mandatory policy? So then to find out about ESG, sustainable socialist economies, and the programming of digital currencies, you can go over and sign up to the website, and you can get the audio track, and also read my Deep Think article on why the WEF's ESGs are the biblical mark of the beast, the mark of commerce, with the where the false prophets will not allow you to barter, work, and trade without a rubber stamp on your skin. And I go through all of the examples of how digital IDs are being developed through various pieces of legislation in America, the EU, and the UK, and I'm sure there's lots in your own country.
Mm-hmm. You can also listen to that with our very own audio track from Jonathan Crowe.
Yes, and it's fantastic. Cheers, John Crowe, for making my articles all the way better. So I suppose I'll end on a high note and say, what happens if you aren't a part of this new carbon credit economy? Well, you can always get composted if you're one of the useful eaters, according to Yuval Noah Harari. You can be Soylent Green in California. Human remains can be legally composted in 2027 in California. California will begin offering the option of human composting after death, thanks to a bill recently signed into law that aims to tackle climate change. Human composting, also known as natural organic reduction, NOR, would be an option for residents who don't want to be buried or cremated upon their death starting in 2027. The process involves placing the body inside a long, reusable steel container along with wood chips and flowers to aerate it, allowing microbes and bacteria to break down the remains. Approximately 1 month later, the remains will fully decompose and be turned into soil. So you will be eating vegetables grown in human. Advocates for the bill, which was signed into law by Governor Gavin Newsom on Sunday, American Psycho himself, have said that NOR is a more climate-friendly option, AB 351 will provide an additional option for California residents that is more environmentally friendly and gives them another choice for burial, Democratic Assembly member Christina Garcia, author of the bill, said in a statement. I look forward to continuing my legacy to fight for clean air by using my reduced remains to plant a tree, she said. She wrote, noting that herself, she may choose the method when she passes away. So, if you're dispirited about the coming carbon social credit system and feel like even if we kick up a fuss on Twitter and write petitions and carry cash as much as possible that you can't fight back, well, as Chairman Mao once said, there's an advantage to death. It at least produces fertilizer.
Thanks for watching that segment from the podcast Lotus Eaters. If you enjoyed that and want to find more, you can subscribe to our website and become a premium member to access all of our exclusive content, including this recent video I did with Connor, the politics and philosophy of the Snyderverse. And if you'd like to find more from Connor himself, you can find him on Getter at con_Tomlinson. Thank you and goodbye.